Thank you very much, President Mary Lafoy, and thanks to you and the commissioners for inviting me along here today. On the question of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre being 40 years old and FLAC being 50, one of the commissioners, Donagh O'Connell, sent me a text congratulating me on my 90th when he joined the two together. So, I am very grateful to be here, and I suppose conscious that really what I'm going to be doing is really a bit of a pen of praise to the Law Reform Commission in its wisdom and wit, in the focus it is now putting on sexual offences. And as long as my voice will hold, I will be looking at it, what it is like working in the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, listening to those who are the victims and survivors of crimes of sexual violence, and looking at things that are not only inconveniences to them, but that are injustices and are in need of reform. And then, as I say, I will be congratulating the Commission on looking at our submissions on the way up along the way, and on the work it is doing on this area. And in the same way that I'm also very disappointed about the automated vehicles not coming in until 2050, because I'm a go-car user myself, and I would actually like not to have to drive it either, but especially as now I'd never get insurance again if I went back to trying to have my own car, and 2050 is probably a teeny bit late for me. But anyway, we'll see. But in this area of sexual offences, I believe I am not just special pleading when I say that this is a particular type of crime and a particular need for it to be looked at in a special context. This type of intimate violence is different from so many other types of crime. First of all, it is perpetrated normally by someone known to the victim survivor. Normally, not always, but normally, which is unusual. It is often perpetrated in circumstances that are ambiguous, because sexual activity is not only an enjoyable and loving form of activity, but it's essential to human nature for the most part, and is therefore something that is considered normal and to be promoted in circumstances where the survival of the species is at stake, let alone anything else. And therefore, it is ambiguous when what is a normal and often necessary activity is seen as criminal. It is a special type of crime in that the nature of the crime is changing. What was considered perfectly normal at one time, like swooping into another tribe, picking up a woman and taking her off without knowing who she is in order to bear your children, might have been considered legitimate at one stage. It is no longer considered legitimate in our circumstances. And indeed, our understanding of what rape is has changed a lot, so that it is now based on consensual activity. But in a report by Amnesty International in 2018, of a survey of 31 European jurisdictions, only 8 of those had a definition of rape based on consent. So we're moving, that is the proper norm, according to European and international human rights standards, but nonetheless it is moving. And there are people like Catherine MacKinnon in the States who would say that it's only a halfway step, and that we should be going much further, but it is that additional halfway step. And the other reason why it's a particular type of crime is that it is a most disruptive crime in circumstances where normally the perpetrator is known to the victim, where normally the activity is seen as healthy and good, and where normally we don't have that great understanding, so that it is disruptive, and often the person seen as disruptive is not the perpetrator of the crime, but the person who names it. So, for all those reasons, it it requires special attention. And in the paper that the Law Reform Commission issued last Friday on what, it has to be said, could be considered a very small and obscure defence to rape, namely that the defendant's belief that the other party was consenting, no matter how irrational, and the Commission proposals for change, which you see in your packs today, and we've already swiped two copies, and I'm taking a third back to the office now. But in that, there is a really good explanation of how our general law is based on sexual activity being consensual to be lawful and being unlawful when it's non-consensual. And there's a really good description of why this little-used defence needs to be changed to be consistent with the rest of our law. To my mind, the really innovative thing in this paper, or maybe you do it all the time and I just don't read them all as carefully as I should, Commissioner, sorry about that, but the thing that struck me as really important was that it was put in context. So the first thing that was given was the context in which these questions arise, the context in which juries are considering whether or not behaviour is consensual. So looking at issues like the behaviour of the complainant, all the usual rape myths associated there, the dress, it quotes that Eurobarometer survey of 2016 where 21% of Irish people thought there were some circumstances in which sex without consent was justified. And being the Law Reform Commission, it then goes on to explain, did they really understand the question? And that's what I get asked the whole time. Having said that, there were 70 people in that survey who answered that there were occasions when it was okay to have sex without consent when somebody was walking along a dark road on their own at night. So in those circumstances, there is a whole lot of misunderstanding in our society about the behaviour of complainants. And they quoted Sir John Gillan's safety myth as well in relation to that. And this is true for all crime, but it's particularly true for this type of crime. We all would like to believe in the safety myth, that life is actually safe out there, and that if it's not safe, it's partly the complainant's own fault. That's the way we all think. But in this particular type of case, the consequences of asking somebody that out of context are so severe and so potentially re-traumatising that it's problematic. So they raise all the behaviour myths, speaking about perpetrators as well, those who perpetrated being known. And what I often forget to deal with, because I get asked to deal with this the whole time, is they also raise the questions of, are there false allegations of rape? Because honest to goodness, I keep forgetting that every second taxi you go into says, but come here to me, aren't there an awful lot of people who falsely claim rape? And indeed, there is probably a real, there's probably a defensiveness about that, but there's a reality about it as well. If people don't understand consent, if there are some people going around Ireland who think that rape is okay if somebody's on a dark road at night, then we have to look at what people think of even as false allegations of rape. And for the next taxi you're in, if someone says, were you talking about sexual, and you say you were talking about sexual offences, the paper finds that the allegations of rape, in as far as you can judge them, because it's really hard to judge across all the various studies, are no worse than they are for any other type of crime. And certainly it is one of the things that dogs us as well. So having set that out, so that paper is definitely the first chapter that is going to go into our induction pack for anyone coming in to work in the office as well, because it literally it's nicely written so that you don't have to be a lawyer, and I am kind of alone in my office in being a lawyer. It's an unusual place to be for me after FLAC and private practice, but There is something about giving the context that the world we live in doesn't necessarily understand sexual offences as thoroughly as it should, and in the way it will understand burglary or fraud or a whole lot of other areas of very difficult law as well, because our society has to come on a journey in relation to the law, in relation to the crime. And so working, again, mainly with victims, the therapy and the help that people need, having been traumatised as a victim of sexual offences, is very real, and there are real issues around that. But the justice system is the other big area where victims of sexual offences are so badly served feel so badly served, actually are so badly served. I'll stick with the first way of saying that. Because what people are trying to do... Do you know those squishy sponges that you try to put into too small a space and bits of them kind of keep coming out? You can get it in if you really squish them very small. If you drain them of every ounce of liquid, you can get them in. And if you bung down on top of them really fast, the squishy sponge will stay in there. But you've done damage to everything. You've lost all the facilities of the sponge. You could ruin it. And I often feel like that about the way the justice system tries to bring in this special type of crime into the system that is there already. And that is particularly true for the trial process. But in general, the justice system then, recognising in some ways that it is a different type of intimate crime that's different to other areas, then tries to treat it exactly the same in the legal system. So by doing that, the justice system actually runs two huge risks. One is the one that I'll talk about a bit more a little bit later, and that is failing to hold perpetrators to account. If, as we understand it, about 90% of criminal activity, possibly more, is not reported or doesn't go to trial. 90%. But, you know, it is just an amazing amount of activity that may never be reported, let alone prosecuted. And if that is the case, then there are perpetrators of crime who are never going to be held to account. That then allows those perpetrators to continue with unlawful activity and to engage in further activity. And the other thing is, it really damages the rule of law. And the other human rights issues, risks, are for the victims themselves. My theory is that in addition to all the changes we see in the justice system over time, the 21st century could be the century in which we see the rights of victims properly recognised. It's not that they weren't there before, but they weren't recognised. The 19th century was very much, and up to then, still the prosecutor, even before the state you had the private prosecutor, then you had the state prosecutor. The 20th century brought about such huge increases in the rights of accused persons properly, to be properly represented against the might of the state, to have legal aid, to have access to the evidence, to have rights of appeal. All of these were developed in the 20th century. The victim, the complainant, remained a tool in the system rather than a person in their own right. I do think it was quite a shock to our system when the European Union Victims Directive became something that we actually had to implement as law in this country. It took a lot of people time to get their heads around the legislation. We have the legislation. I'm not sure that we are properly understanding yet of what it is like to have rights as a victim of crime in our justice system. And maybe this is the century where they get developed. Currently, when the topic gets raised, I certainly know a lot of practitioners go, oh my God, that's going to be very messy. That's going to be very difficult to work. Are you talking about having another party in court? And indeed, that's one of the things the Law Reform Commission will be looking at. I'm not saying that those are the answers the Law Reform Commission will come up with. But what I am saying is that victims have rights, and particularly they have rights not to be re-traumatised by the justice system. And victims of sexual offences who are giving evidence on things so intimate you often would not even tell your best friend, on things so ruinous to your dignity that they may last a lifetime. And in these cases, our justice system is currently re-traumatising, which is why what is proposed in the fifth programme of work is so important. We had our 40th, the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre had our 40, it marked our 40 years last week. And yet again, I heard what I've heard time and again in the over 3 years that I've worked there. And that is the reality for a complainant, is that the justice system remains lonely and a difficult and a hostile place. And therefore, people will not report, or when they do report, it is hurtful to them. And it was that the other thing we heard was how important it was to hear those who are victims or survivors, both of which are labels which we use with some hesitation. But we have to use something we think, because you can't just say people, because there are people who have been through a particular experience. They've experienced sexual violence, and they have been victims of a crime. So we do also call them experts by experience. And at that conference, we heard from them and we heard of the value of hearing them, because they were able to tell us something different. And therefore, at the launch of the paper last Friday by the Law Reform Commission, I was heartened and delighted to hear the emphasis being placed by the Commission on consultation more widely. And I'm sure you will be consulting on these various issues raised by the fifth programme. The definition of rape was mentioned earlier. Sexual history evidence, which is such a perennial issue for victims, are particularly, again, when you remember that very often this is an intimate partner. This is someone who knows the person, the complainant, very well, and is therefore likely to be able to manipulate the fears of the complainant. And very often those fears are that other sexual history will be brought into evidence, and that they won't know until the court case actually comes on. That and other issues are also going to be dealt with by the next speaker, I'm sure, Commissioner Tom O'Malley, in the interdepartmental group that he's chairing as well. I'm not making any plugs here, Tom, because we put in our piece. But there are some things that seem and are mentioned also by the Law Reform Commission, things about process which could be easier, which could be better, which could be different, and which would make it an easier thing for the victim, who again, in terms of giving their evidence, has to now remember every single thing about the assault, the harm that was perpetrated on them until a trial is over. Thus, denying them the opportunity to put it behind them and recover often. Other issues, so the discretionary corroboration warning, you would really like to see that, and the doctrine of recent complaint, both of them issues that really have come along with sexual offences over time and really need a little bit of a modern light shone on them. On the question of the anonymity of the accused is another area that will be coming up. And this is really interesting because the Gillen Review looked at it as well. And it's one of those areas where I was very clear when I started off that the accused should not be anonymous. And now, on balance, I think maybe they should be, but I'm dying to see what the Law Reform Commission will make of it as well. Because in my previous work, and as you I mean, Kath McGuinness and Carmen Stewart and others as well here, who did a lot of family law over time. In private family law, something that makes it work is that those cases are anonymous. And while there is a lot to be said for justice being done in public and being seen to be done in public, you have to weigh against that the intimate nature of the evidence that will be given. The fact that it is a criminal case and that there is a very high standard of proof. The fact that people are truly traumatised by it. And it's just one of those things that I think deserves a look outside the normal rules that we apply. We have taken a view that children's criminal cases should be dealt with in private. This is another area where I'm really interested to see where it goes. But trials other than in public, I can't see us going back from that standard. But it certainly is something that the Commission will have to look at. Not only in the actual review of sexual offence, but there's so many other things in this as well that matter a lot to the people we work with. And one of the things that many of them will say is, what's going to happen if he is convicted or she is convicted? And you have to say, don't know, depends on the day, depends on who we get, depends on what, you know. You could say, here's the range. But the range is so huge that often for somebody who may have to go home to the same person, if it's a sibling or a parent or a partner or a child, they have to go home to them. So they need to know, is that person more likely to give a suspended sentence? So the discussion on structured sentencing is really important, as will be the development of sentencing databases and sentencing guidelines under the Judicial Council Act when it is commenced. And I know of particular interest to somebody here today is the whole question of compensation for victims of crime as well. And that's just one of the areas where we really haven't understood. Again, it's one of the ways for people understanding how serious something is where compensation is recognised as a remedy, and where the state, as the holder of the obligation to protect and promote and respect the rights of victims, really does have to do a piece of work in this area as well. And finally, in terms of perjury is the other area. And there have been some recent developments where I think there have been a couple of Shannon bills in relation to perjury recently. And we've had to go in and say, look, if you just put that through without recognising the potential for complainants in sexual offence trials to be stopped from giving evidence in the context that their partner or ex-boyfriend or whatever will threaten them with perjury proceedings if they say anything wrong about something that happened a number of years ago. That's going to be really relevant as well. So the number of areas will be on your tail, President Lavoie. We'll just be watching every single thing you do. And if we could lobby for anything, it would be that you would put this up first and that you get the resources you need in order to do it well. So I wish you well with the work. We're absolutely delighted that this is happening, and we feel, though, that it is way overdue that there is this focus on sexual offences, that particular type of intimate crime which has been hidden, which hasn't been reported, and which, as a result, is doing injustice to an awful lot of people as victims of those crimes, and also to us as a society where reporting is not happening because it is such a horrific procedure. So thank you very much. Okay.